You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF. I'm Scott Lamar. On this special day in South Central Pennsylvania, the annual Extraordinary Give hosted by the Lancaster County Community Foundation. It began at midnight this morning and will run until 11:59 p.m. tonight. It's the nation's largest per capita one-day fundraiser. That's right, the entire nation per capita one-day fundraiser. Those who would like to give can go to extragive.org and choose from amongst 516 nonprofit organizations to contribute to. That includes WITF. WITF has broadcast from the Extraordinary Give every year since it began in 2012. As I said, last year, I was actually doing this from my basement, as I called my home studio. This year, we're back in the studios of WITF. There have been some changes with Extraordinary Give geographically and outdoors and indoors. We'll talk about that in just a few minutes. Over the next hour, we'll talk about the Extraordinary Give, the money being raised, and a few of the nonprofit organizations that are participating. But joining us up front, Sam Bressy, President and CEO of the Lancaster County Community Foundation, and Tracy Cutler, the Executive Vice President of the Lancaster County Community Foundation. Welcome to both of you today. Sam, things are a little bit different this year. I mean, they were different, much different last year during the height of the pandemic. But what's different this year?
I think there's first of all, Scott, thanks. Thanks for being such a consistent supporter. ITF's done such a wonderful job promoting the event across the region, and we just really appreciate the partnership. What's the same about Extraordinary Give is the giving. And you go to extragive.org, you pick from 516 organizations, and you make your contribution, and that contribution is stretched by our presenting sponsors, Rogers and Associates and High Foundation and many others. And there are prizes and activities throughout the day, which we can talk about. What's different is that we're back. We're live this year, we're just going to be layering up and having some hand warmers and feet warmers. We have a full-on concert with three bands and a DJ on King Street. So at the Square in Lancaster, the lighting of the Grice Building will be happening. And we're hoping that everybody comes down, particularly our fully vaccinated friends and family come down. If you're not fully vaccinated, we encourage you to wear a mask. And we're going to be outside and we're going to be having a blast and we're going to celebrate the generosity of Lancaster County and Central PA.
This is the 10th Extra Give, Sam. And, you know, when I was talking to someone about it, I described it as one of the iconic events in Central Pennsylvania. Usually it takes a little longer than 10 years to become an icon. But I would say that when you go from raising $1 million the first year to 13.4 in your ninth year, you have reached iconic status. And it's not just the fundraising, but the participation of the community. It's something that many people and organizations look forward to every year. Let's go back to that first year. I always like doing that because it shows how much the Extra Give has grown over the years. Go back to that first year and talk about how the event has grown over the years.
Well, I think when you look at anything, it's like Apple stock. You know, Apple stock is something that's kind of a no-brainer. Everybody would buy Apple stock. Well, when Apple was kind of coming of age, it was a big risk. And who knew, you know? I think that's kind of how I think about Extraordinary Give. Right now, it looks like it was a complete no-brainer. Of course it was going to work. When we first did this, we had teed it up. We had worked with our board. We stood at the Ware Center, actually, at midnight. And I remember talking to the team and saying, look, it's up to the county now. It's up to the community to give, and we'll see. And, you know, our concern was we had invested like $300,000 in to get it started. And would we even raise $300,000? And that first year we raised $1.6 million. And I think it was like a collective wow, you know, and across the community. And there was a bit of awe and wonder. And it was never really meant to be an annual event. It was meant to be a one-time event in 2012. And, you know, after it was so successful that there was just a community outcry, And I remember talking specifically with Rick Rogers and saying, you know, if we're going to do this again, we're going to have corporate support. And he just said, call me. And the next thing you know, he was on board. He and Jesse and Rogers and Associates were on board with a presenting sponsorship. They've been our partners ever since. Subsequently, High Foundations jumped on board as a presenting sponsor. We have about 15 other really generous corporate sponsors. The community comes out and just, you know, it's because you said an iconic event. You know, it's kind of our version of a holiday, and we celebrate the generosity and the giving that's associated with our region and our community.
Tracy Cutler, do you have to take that phone call?
I do not. Thanks okay. for asking.
Well, no, I asked that question because I'm sure during these 24 hours, you are receiving call after call after call. So I just want to make sure it wasn't something that would disrupt what's going on. We would hate to disrupt the extraordinary give during Smart Talk because you couldn't take a phone call. But Tracy, I joke with you. I joke with you. But for those who may be hearing about Extraordinary Give for the first time, how can they give? And I mean, Sam kind of described what it's about, but how can they give? Who can they give to? How do they decide who they can give to?
Yeah, that's the essence of the day, isn't it, Scott? So, you know, like Sam said, this is an online fundraiser. And at its core, that's really what's happening. And people can visit the website, extragive.org. Extragive.org is where all of the giving happens. And by visiting that website, people have an opportunity to explore the missions and impact and programs of more than 500 organizations. And so visiting that website allows you to search for a specific organization that you know about or search by a cause that you might be interested in, whether it's education or the environment or youth or arts. So people can go and explore and learn about many, many different kinds of causes in our community and press the donate button, which gives you an opportunity to make a donation of $10 or more to any sort of cause. And as Sam mentioned, every dollar that's donated at extragive.org today is then stretched with our stretch pool. Every dollar that's donated today has an opportunity to actually win one of the many prizes that are listed on our on the website and, you know, give a little extra to the organization you care about. And where the magic really happens is after someone makes a donation or learns about an organization that they feel passionate about through extragive.org, then talking about it, sharing what you think is exciting and what you care about, you know, with your friends, with your family, through social media, through phone calls, through conversations. That's really what Extraordinary Give is about. Visiting extragive.org, certainly, and looking and learning and making a donation and then talking about it. And I think that's what we've seen over the last 10 years is people have continued to talk about it. It has brought so many more conversations into our community about the idea of giving. It's been really exciting to watch people talk with their families about giving. We know, you know, groups that families sit down together and make their giving plan. I know in our family, we have lists. My children are now out of the house and they're living in other cities and far away, and they're making their giving plan for Extraordinary Give. So that's really the magic of it. We are all in different places, but we all have passions and things that we care about. And it's a chance to go to one website and do that. But it's about much more than an online giving day, which I think is part of the magic and part of what makes it extra special.
Yeah, each one of the 516 nonprofit organizations, there's a profile on the website, extragive.org. I've heard several people over the years say this is a great way to learn about the nonprofit organizations and the people that they help, people and animals and other causes that they help. I mean, probably there are organizations that many don't even realize exist or the work that they do, and this is a way for them to learn about it. Something new this year, Sam, is organizations were given the opportunity to include their non-discrimination policy. Why?
Well, we as a community foundation believe that it's really important to have a community that's, you know, to have shared values and to really explore those values. And one of those values is equity and inclusion and non-discrimination. So, you know, it's a small step on our part to kind of enable those organizations who have policies and want to shine some sunlight on those policies to be able to do that clearly and easily on the website. And, you know, for those who aren't, who at this point, it's a little bit of an encouragement. We're hoping that, you know, in years to come, things will change. There'll be more focus and more attention paid to that. You know, we require an audit or independent financial review. We require a BCO registration for participation in Extraordinary Give. All 516 organizations meet those requirements, and they serve Lancaster County. And we're kind of leaning in on the idea of every organization, no matter they're big or small, should have a non-discrimination policy. It should follow that policy, and everybody should be welcome. Everybody should have access. And we believe that's what makes an extraordinary community. So that is new for this year. The other thing that's new is the Pursuit of Equity Prize. We partnered with Steinman Foundation. It's our largest prize ever. It's $50,000, and it's broken out into 10 $5,000 chunks. And organizations submitted applications for how they're embodying the spirit of equity and how they're doing that work throughout their organization, both inwardly and from a policy perspective, and outwardly from a service perspective. And there are 10 organizations out of the qualified organizations that will be selected randomly, and we're announcing those organizations throughout the day. One quick thing, Scott, I'm staring here at the number. You know, last year we were wrestling with, oh my gosh, I hope we hit 3 million while we're on the air. Well, we didn't get to do that this year because we were already at 3 million before we started our conversation. We're at 3.3 million right now. But the more important number than the total dollars raised is 7,359. That's how many people have already given this on this day in the first 9 hours through Extraordinary Give. And we're hoping that number lands in the 50,000 range, you know, 30,000 plus range, I'll say that. So that's the key. We're welcoming everybody to give and everybody to experience the joy of giving. And even if you can't give, if you don't have the resources to give, go on extragive.org. Pick an organization or two that you think you love what they're doing. Share it with your social media networks, because your endorsement is priceless. So everybody's welcome and everybody can participate.
Sam, I did want to get back to the non-discrimination policy. In the previous 9 years, Extra Give has gotten almost universal praise and positive attention. But this year, there's been some criticism, as has been pointed out, that some of the organizations, people have said they're not LGBTQ friendly, or that they may even discriminate. It's been suggested that those organizations don't meet the foundation's stated values and shouldn't be able to participate. I know both you and Tracy have talked about that, but how do you respond to that?
I think it's a valid criticism, and I think there's more than some truth. There's truth to that. And so what is Extraordinary Give? Extraordinary Give is a platform that the way we designed the platform was to welcome donors, new donors, to try to bring people and draw people to philanthropy. The participating organizations meet a lowest bar of that we can kind of present. And those participating organizations represent, it's a mirror that reflects the organizations that are serving our community. Whether all of them all of them are not equal from the standpoint of do they discriminate? Do some of them possibly even go further than that and do harm? We're really wrestling with this, but we are, as a community foundation, we really are working to both value and embody the value of equity and the value of relationships. And this is a challenging issue for us. We want clear criteria for organizations to participate. We have those. We continue to talk about what might happen in the future, and we understand where the criticism is coming from. We respect it. We're listening. We're learning as an organization. And all I can say is you know, more to come as the months and years go by.
And Scott, I'll add that this is a conversation that has really come to the forefront this year. And, you know, we appreciate that. And this is what the Extraordinary Give is, one event and we're one organization. And it's an opportunity that has really started a conversation that I think is for our broader community. So we, you know, we appreciate the opportunity to kind of have a larger platform to begin this conversation. And we're committed to continuing it and working with other partners, because it will take many of us in this conversation to advance it and to think about how it can look differently as we move forward.
Well, I want to thank both of you for being on the program with us today. I know you're very busy. You're both indoors. Why?
Not for long.
Okay. All right. I just want to make sure that you're going to be outside with everyone else. But, yeah.
We will be, Scott. We hope you come and join us. Just wear lots of layers, wear some hand warmers and a hat, and it'll be a blast.
Sam, it's not that cold.
Oh, it'll be cold tonight, trust me. But not too cold to keep us inside.
Sam Bressy is president and CEO. Tracy Cutler is executive vice president of the Lancaster County Community Foundation. Thank both of you for being on with us today.
Thank you, Scott.
Thanks for having us. Happy Extra Give Day.
Kobe's Family Services educates, supports, and empowers children and adults to reach their full potential. This is from their mission statement. They pursue their mission through wraparound services in foster care, adoption, counseling, and family life education, delivered with hope that as many as possible in the community can live fulfilling and productive lives and reach their full potential. Joining us, Executive Director Mark Cunningham and Melanie Rankin, Adoption Coordinator with Kobe's Family Services. Welcome to both of you. Now, I just gave the description right from your website, Mark Cunningham, about Kobe's, but how would you describe what Kobe's does?
Thanks for having us. I would describe us as a child and family services organization that does a lot of services to make sure that as many kids as possible are safe and that families get the services they need to be as productive as they can, both as parents and as members of the community. And we do that, as you said, through the foster care system. Again, making sure as many kids as possible are safe.
When you say safe, safe from what?
So the kids that are with us in foster care come to us because they have been in abusive or neglectful situations. And that's that can be from parents who are addicted, parents who are in prison, parents who have abused them or neglected them. And so we recruit and train families to be able to care for these kids and provide all the services those children need while they're in our care. So again, they're with our foster families that have been approved. They go through a training period. They go through an approval process. And when they are approved, then they receive these children and provide care for them. So that's what I mean by safe.
Mm-hmm. Who are the parents who become the adults who become foster parents or maybe even adopt? Who are they? What kind of families are you looking at? Okay, when I say what kind of families, meaning do they have characteristics that obviously they care about children, but who are people who come to you? What do you notice about their characteristics that these are people who care about children and they want to help?
The first word, Scott, because of mine is amazing. I continue every time I think about our families, that's the word that comes to mind, because these families are, as you said, obviously they have to care about kids if they're going to open up their homes to these children. They are extraordinarily patient. These kids, as you might imagine, are coming in with trauma. They are coming in with many issues that cause behavioral struggles that are not necessarily like the family's birth children. And so there's patience that they do. They walk this journey. They are committed and they walk this journey for years at a time with these kids and they just want to give these kids the best opportunity for success as possible. And we certainly are thankful for these families and enjoy the journey with them.
Melanie Rankin is the adoption coordinator with Kobe's Family Services, and Kobe's is part of the SWAN network in Pennsylvania, which coordinates adoptions across the state. Melanie, tell us a little bit about what's going on. If you had to describe the state of adoption today, what do you see?
Yeah, it's definitely challenging times. You know, for a lot of our families, COVID has really, the system is just really overtaxed. It's hard for kids to get services right now, not a lot of services available. So what we can do as Kobe's is just come alongside families and kids and just provide that extra level of care and support. And really help them through this challenging time that they're facing in their lives.
Has it gotten any better? I'm sorry to interrupt it. Has it gotten any better? I mean, we are not out of the pandemic yet. It seems as though just as when it looks like we're going to be, there's another surge. Hopefully that doesn't happen this winter. But, I mean, as we've gone through this, are children able to get more services? And what kind of services are they missing?
They are able to get services. I think we've adapted well in changing our formats over to things like telehealth and, you know, meeting with kids virtually, which isn't always, like, you know, our priority, but we're able to do that and adapt. But yeah, I think things are getting better. You know, I know Kobe's counseling department is really able to expand and is really working on helping see as many clients as they can. So yeah, I think things are getting better.
So when you say that Kobe's is offering family services, what does that mean?
We offer a wide variety of services. We have a family life education department that provides parenting classes for families. We have a counseling department that provides counseling to children and adults and families. And we also have our foster care unit as well. So we really meet every area of the family system, I believe, in the care that we provide.
Mm-hmm. So Mark Cunningham, A Day Like Today, The Extraordinary Give. What does this fundraising opportunity mean to an organization like yours?
We are part of the Department of Human Services, and we are part of the statewide adoption network that Melanie works with SWAN. So we get reimbursed for services that we provide for kids and staff, for the kids and families that we serve. We get reimbursed. What happens is that we provide care that exceeds what is required of us. So fundraisers like this help us bridge the gap between what we get reimbursed from the state and what it actually costs us to provide the services for these kids. It's a huge deal for us. And like I said, it helps bridge the gap.
Mm. What kind of fundraising do you do otherwise outside of Extraordinary Give?
Our main fundraiser just happened in September. It's a bike and hike where we get about 300 or more people gathered to go for a walk, a bicycle ride, or a motorcycle ride. And we also have a banquet in the spring of each year in March. And so with the bike and hike, with the banquet, and with this event, those are the three fundraisers that we rely most heavily on. And of course, like all nonprofits, we rely on year-end giving to help get us where we need to be.
Well, what do you see going forward as the biggest challenges?
Well, that's a really good question. Navigating the child welfare system is challenging. There are new regulations and requirements that come down on a regular basis. And so we have to be relatively nimble. So it's a challenge for us to think about 3 or 5 years out. That's a challenge because I don't know what child welfare will look like in 3 years. I don't know what the rules and regulations will be. So we have to be nimble and we have to be quick. And the other thing that we need to do is continue to try to get excellent staff that are providing these services. We are almost fully staffed. We did see a little bit of a drop with COVID and people leaving, but we're back to almost fully staffed and looking forward to serving as many kids and families as we need to.
Executive Director Mark Cunningham and Melanie Rankin, Adoption Coordinator with Kobe's Family Services. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks for having us.
If you're just tuning in, it is a special day in Central Pennsylvania. It is the 10th. I know that we usually say annual. It is annual, but it is the 10th Extraordinary Give. WITF has been there every year. 516 nonprofit organizations that you can contribute to by going to extragive.org. Truly a community event, not just in Lancaster County, but throughout Central Pennsylvania and even beyond the borders of Central Pennsylvania. There are some nonprofits that are involved. Nonprofits that work for the benefit of animals are some of the most popular for the Extraordinary Give. The Omega Horse Rescue and Rehabilitation Center in Ayrville is one of them. We're joined now by Omega Horse Rescue founder Kelly Smith and board member Dr. Nikki Scherer, who is a veterinarian. She currently serves as assistant professor of ophthalmology at the University of Pennsylvania's new Bolton Center in Kennett Square in Chester County. I want to thank both of you for being on the program today. Kelly Smith, you're the founder. Tell me about Omega Horse Rescue.
Well, thank you, first of all, for having us today. We really appreciate being included in such a special day. Omega Horse Rescue is a very special program to me and the many other people and the animals that we serve. It has brought the lives of many animals. We do miraculous things here with changing the lives of animals and humans together.
Where do the horses come from that you're rescuing?
So there is an auction house that we go to oftentimes in Lancaster County, and those horses are a lot of them sold for slaughter. So we do a lot of rescue and rehabilitation of slaughter-bound horses and other farm animals. Hmm.
Slaughter, you're talking, unfortunately, about that would become meat, right?
Yes, it's a delicacy in France, Belgium, Holland, Japan, and Mexico. The horses are purchased here live, and then they are tagged and weighed at a facility in Pennsylvania and shipped live to Canada and Mexico for slaughtering.
And it's all completely legal.
It is completely legal, yes. Hmm.
Dr. Scherer, what kind of shape are these animals in when they come to Omega?
Yeah, so there's a couple groups of horses. Some are in very bad shape and need a very long rehabilitation process. And then another group are fairly healthy animals. It depends a little bit how long they were in the kill pen and what state they were sent there in. But a lot of the reasons why horses end up in the slaughter pipeline is maybe just a lack of training and nothing else, sadly.
Who are the people, and when I say the people, you know, who is turning these horses in so that they can be slaughtered?
Well, in this country, unfortunately, I don't think that people realize we have a serious overpopulation of horses, just like cats and dogs. And while there are many shelters that cats and dogs can be taken to, and a lot of them, unfortunately, are also euthanized, horses do not have the same same benefits. So if you can take your horse to an auction and get several hundred dollars for it and it gets sold for slaughter versus it's standing in your backyard and you don't know what to do with it. That is why it is so important that there are animal shelters such as ours we stand in the gap to help those animals that people cannot no longer take care of.
Dr. Scherer, you say that sometimes it takes longer for some animals. I mean, that's not a surprise. Every animal is different. But what does rehabilitation entail?
Yeah, so it depends a little bit what kind of state they come in to the rescue. But a lot of, take a poorly neglected case. that horse may have a medical issue that we need to deal with first, and that can take months. And then once we deal with the medical issue, they still need to become an appropriate weight. So putting on weight is not a quick process, so that can take another 6 months. And then at that point, we go through a training assessment. What does this horse know? What do we need to teach it before it's safe to adopt? And so some of these horses, honestly, we can have over a year before we feel like they're appropriate adoption candidates. And the wonderful thing about Kelly and the rescue is that she puts priority on giving them that time and making sure that when we put them up for adoption, they're horses that can be forever animals for someone.
Kelly Smith, today is a fundraiser. How important is this fundraiser to your organization? And I guess the bottom line question is, how important is money to your organization?
Well, this fundraiser today allows us or determines how many more animals that we can help in a given year. It is extremely important to us. Fundraising in general has been very difficult with COVID. The demand for animals in need has greatly risen. And unfortunately, the part about fundraising has been so much more difficult. So today means the world to us and to the animals and the community that we serve.
Hmm. Just give us an idea. I mean, I have to say that in my own mind, I was comparing a rescue shelter for dogs and cats to what you do with horses. Obviously, we're talking about animals that are much larger, take up much more space, probably eat more. I mean, what kind of cost are you talking about?
Well, it depends on the rehabilitation that each animal needs. As Dr. Nicky said, we tailor our program per animal. But if an animal it comes into our program and it has a lot of trauma, that horse has to be here usually for a lot longer, and the training is a lot more intense. So it can cost upwards of, just in the training aspect of it, about $4,000 for 4 months of training, professional training. That does not include the medical cases that we get in. And those cases can range anywhere from a few hundred dollars to $20,000 per animal, depending what surgeries that the horse may need.
Kelly, you said that you go to these auctions. Have you ever driven along the road, looked out your car window and saw a horse that you thought was in really bad shape and approached those people and say, listen, we'd like to take that horse?
Yes, we do. We actually have set up a community program where we do educational pieces specifically for certain communities in Lancaster County, where we bring in veterinarians, we bring in farriers, horse dentists, people can come and learn about how to, you know, what are the latest vaccinations that our animal needs? How do we improve the nutrition of our animals so that we can, you know, be able to get the most from the animal's life possible?
Dr. Scher, there are horse dentists. I thought vets took care of the horse teeth too.
Yeah, they do. So, you know, obviously a veterinarian that specializes in dentistry is, you know, our ideal choice. But there are people trained in dentistry that work with veterinarians and also can really do a good job at maintaining.
Just one of those things you learned during Extraordinary Gift. I want to thank both of you for being with us today. Joining us was Omega Horse Rescue founder Kelly Smith and board member Dr. Nicky Scherer, a veterinarian. Thank you both for being with us today.
Thank you so much
for having us.
10,000 Friends of Pennsylvania. It's a statewide nonpartisan advocate for responsible and efficient land use and partner for great places to live and work. Now, I'm reading this directly from their website. We work with citizens, organizations, and public officials to create land use, infrastructure, development, and governance policies and projects that strengthen the economy, protect our resources, save money, and build healthy, vibrant, and resilient communities for all. Joining us, Stacy Rideball, who is president and CEO of 10,000 Friends of Pennsylvania, and Laurie Crawford, a board member and research project manager with Penn State Reach. I want to thank both of you for being with us today. Stacey Reitabaugh, I read your mission statement and what you do, but if you were to describe this to someone on the street, how would you describe 10,000 Friends of Pennsylvania?
Thanks, Scott. We're happy to be here this morning. How I would describe it, really boiling it down to a nutshell, is that we're a nonpartisan statewide advocate for community resilience, smart growth, and responsible and efficient land use. And we partner and collaborate with organizations and residents to make great places.
You know, one of the terms that, and I know that it is associated with 10,000 Friends, I don't know, I don't seem to hear it as much anymore, but smart growth. What is smart growth, and how does 10,000 Friends of Pennsylvania look at smart growth?
You're absolutely right. We don't hear it as much anymore. And I think smart growth has evolved to a point of being more adaptive to climate change and also to a lot of the physical and environmental stressors that we have. Smart growth in this day and age is really still a lot of responsible practices about managing growth and land use, and specifically transportation within communities. It's about making good choices. It's about having balance. So it's not making a choice between affordable housing and farmland preservation. It's how do we do both? How do we find ways to connect people from the place that they are to the place that they want to be without perhaps bringing a lot of sprawl and unnecessary infrastructure? We want to be able to preserve those beautiful places and parklands and things like that, while also making sure that everyone has a decent place to live.
Hmm. Okay. So, you know, we could spend an entire hour. In fact, we may sometime talk about that. But how do you do those things?
We really do it through partnerships and working with a network of advocates. There are many, many other statewide organizations and actually local organizations, many of whom are present in the Extra Give, that are working in the trenches every single day. We bring people together through our policy council to really discuss and vet policy solutions, and then we advocate for proven successful solutions to the General Assembly. So what we do is a bit different than a lot of other human services in that we're not directly working with clients on the ground. We're working with advocates to really develop those strong community development and policy solutions that are going to improve the quality of life for everyone.
A perfect world. What would the perfect community look like?
What would the perfect what look like? I'm sorry.
Community.
Every community is different. It's hard to say, but I think in my perfect version of it, with all of the tools of smart growth and community resilience, it would be a cohesive community where there's equality and equity, and that everyone has an opportunity and really has that opportunity on a level playing field to have economic opportunities, to have a place to live, to have open space, and to be able to enjoy the places where they live and work.
Mm-hmm. Laurie Crawford, first of all, what's Penn State Reach?
Penn State Reach is a grant project funded by the CDC. It's racial and ethnic approaches to community health. So we work on projects similar to some with 10,000 Friends, working on built environment and nutrition and physical activity projects, specifically in Lebanon and Berks counties.
Mm. You know, one of the things, again, that when I was talking to Stacey about not hearing much about smart growth anymore, it seems as though this has grown. This conversation has grown. I mean, it used to be you'd hear most often the word you would hear is sprawl. Trying to stay away from sprawl, trying to bring you more green spaces. But both of you are now talking about economics and equity and opportunity. So, Laurie, from looking into the future, what does that look like?
Well, An important component, especially with Stacey and I's position, is to collaborate with the community. You know, I was inspired to join 10,000 Friends because of its collaborative efforts. And so I think part of it begins by working together, finding the right organizations, and listening very carefully to each of these communities. You know, 10,000 Friends works statewide, but we like to be in these small communities listening, seeing the projects that already exist, and then adding those components, like Stacey said, of smart growth, so that the projects can be, you know, more collective of the community. Mm-hmm.
Stacey, if you would, give me some examples that Central Pennsylvanians may be familiar with here in this region that you look at and say, okay, that they're doing it right. That's what the community of the future will look like and act like.
I might be a little bit biased since it's my hometown, but I'd like to say the city of Lancaster is doing a lot of things right. And I don't say that without cause, because as I'm traveling around the state, well, as we did in the before times, a lot of people in different communities are asking us, how did Lancaster get this right? What did Lancaster do to check off all the boxes to have this wonderful, thriving downtown that really draws people in and also retains many of the people who grow up here and live here? Another great example is in Bethlehem, where there's been so much revitalization, especially with the Bethlehem steel plant properties. So one of the things that we look at is with the Commonwealth Awards, we're actually looking at the physical and the built environment of how many of these things are adaptively reused and really brought back to life. So we also look at that as an indicator and how many of those types of projects are happening within a city. Both Lancaster and Bethlehem right now are, you can't walk down a street without seeing a project like that. And it really energizes the community and brings the community together. Mm.
Project. And that seems to indicate that there's more than one person involved. From one of the things that I've heard over the years is that this is not just something that a small group of people can do. It takes cooperation. Talk about that, if you would.
I mean, from anything from a specific land use or even transportation project in a community, there's a long and sometimes arduous process to bring these things to fruition. They don't happen overnight. They take years and years and years of planning. And I think if we look at the 101 North Queen building in the city of Lancaster, that's a great example of it. It's an old factory that was sitting vacant for a decade, if not more. And it's been revitalized to this amazing shining star where people are working and shopping and eating and drinking coffee and even living. So it really activates that part of the street. So you are partnering with not only the municipality, also the developer, also the construction company, the engineers, and they're also partnering with all of the individuals and agencies that are going to be located in that place. So it really is a true collaborative partnership when you look at things like that. Very similarly, the work that we're doing in community development is only possible through collaboration, because you have several agencies that are working in partnership with residents. So whether it's a large scale construction adaptive reuse project or a small scale community project, it takes a village every single time.
You know, what you described, Stacey, you were talking about people visiting, sitting down at a restaurant, having a cup of coffee. If I were to ask people, you know, what do you know about how Lancaster has grown, what Lancaster has done in recent years? Same thing with Bethlehem, the two examples that you gave. They would say that both those places have used the arts, that they've made themselves entertainment venues. Most people probably wouldn't say, well, it was a redevelopment project or environmentally, this is what they're doing. They're looked upon as a place where other people gather. Is that the key? Or and maybe the other part of that question is, are you 10,000 Friends and the advocates that you're working with, the other people, the developers, the planners, legislators, looking out for more than just entertainment to make sure that these communities are more than just places where people gather to enjoy themselves?
Absolutely. And that's a great point. The arts can be a very strong economic driver, but it's an economic driver. It's not the driver. As we're looking at different places and spaces, especially over the past couple of years, we've shifted to have more of an equity focus so that we're looking at, do these communities have spaces that are open for everyone and that are welcoming for everyone? Do these communities have places where everyone can afford to live there and also afford to buy food there? So all of those things really matter. And it has to be a community that is more broad reaching than just tourism and drawing people in for the arts.
Laurie Crawford, that over the years, that has been one of the criticisms of cities that have entertainment districts, if you will, or certain places where people go. I think about Second Street in Harrisburg, Restaurant Row, that a lot of people say, oh, it's a great place to visit. But then there were other people say, well, what about the other neighborhoods? How do you make sure that those other neighborhoods, besides the places that are drawing visitors from in and outside the town or the city, how do you make sure that they are treated equitably and that they benefit from it?
Sure. You know, I think the piece that we haven't talked about yet is that environmental piece, the clean air and water. Cities like Lancaster have done an amazing job to layer in their smart growth with environmental and stormwater initiatives, ways to improve recreation. So while the arts plays an important part, you know, I think building in parks and recreational opportunities and improving the environment in the cities adds to that kind of a desire and uplifts the city in that smart growth initiatives. So I think really paying attention to those environmental initiatives, they aren't quite as loud and people aren't buying tickets to check out the beautiful parks and green spaces, but they are there. And that is creates more of an inclusive area for all sections of the city, because you can build these different areas and not just the downtown district.
Stacy Rideball, how important is a day like today with so many other nonprofit organizations that where people are geared to contribute money? How important is a day like today?
It's critically important. For a statewide organization, fundraising is a lot harder for us because we're not specifically limited to one community. So it's a much broader reach. And we're a small organization. So to have the opportunity to participate in the Extra Give is huge for us. It gives us a chance to connect to our local community and allows us to share what we're working on regionally as well as statewide. But like many nonprofits, I mean, fundraising is a big challenge right now. And to be able to connect with individuals who care about causes like ours, that is just very, very important for us.
You're a small organization. I mean, don't you have 9,999 more friends?
We do, but they're all volunteers and advocates.
But, you know, and as you said, you are a small organization. We've talked about some of the cities in Pennsylvania. What about some of the smaller towns? Do you work with some of the municipalities, the townships, the boroughs?
We do. We work with towns and cities and villages of all sizes. We're actually working in a pilot program right now in Western Pennsylvania in an older town that was a steel town at one point, and now it's declining. And we work within a specific neighborhood of that community. So we're able to work with larger cities as well as the smaller towns. As long as we're connecting with the residents and the organizations that are on the ground, that really brings that opportunity to us. Mm.
Stacy Rideball is president and CEO of 10,000 Friends of Pennsylvania. Laurie Crawford is a board member and research project manager with Penn State Reach. I want to thank both of you for being with us today.
Thank you so much, Scott.
Thank you.
The Extraordinary Give goes until 11:59 p.m., actually 11:59, so you have a few more hours to contribute, but go to extragive.org and you can find those 516 nonprofit organizations, and I will add, including WITF, that you can contribute to. You can contribute to as many as you want. There are profiles there where you can learn about what these organizations do. Even you can search by a cause that you are particularly interested in, and that is at extragive.org. I'm Scott Lamar. Have yourself a great day.